Jesus, and I am delighted to welcome you to this afternoon's featured session in the epidemiology and surveillance track entitled Babies and Boomers and Everyone in Between. We've got two talks this afternoon that I think will be very interesting, and I'm looking forward to hearing them. The first one will be given by Dr. Dan Payne. Dr. Payne is in the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases and has been at CDC since 2004. He got his PhD from Tulane University Graduate School of Medical Sciences in 2003 and had received his Master's of Science in Public Health degree from the University of Alabama, Birmingham. He's currently works as an epidemiologist in the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases in the Viral Diseases Branch and serves as project officer for the New Vaccine Surveillance Network, which is a consortium of seven participating medical institutions which conduct active population-based prospective surveillance of acute gastroenteritis to evaluate the impact of new vaccines and vaccine policies on disease burden, vaccine effectiveness, and rotavirus strain prevalence through active surveillance in the U.S. Dr. Payne's going to tell us about 5 years' experience with rotavirus vaccination in the United States and give us an update on rotavirus vaccine impact and safety. Dr. Payne.
Good afternoon. Thank you for that nice introduction, Dr. Wharton. Now, as I was creating this presentation, a friend of mine at CDC said, you know, try to liven it up a little bit, make it a little bit more spicy than some of the more technocratic talks and titles that you would see. So I took a look at this title and I thought, okay, rotavirus and liven it up, rotavirus and spicy, that's not going to be an easy thing to do. But I've tried, and instead of this title, I'd like to have perhaps an alternative title that you will now see. And it is based on 5 years of the rotavirus vaccine program. And I like this title a little bit better. And the reason, not only that do I have a five-year-old myself, but the reason is because 5 years is just enough time to understand that you probably didn't understand things that were happening in the previous 5 years as they were occurring. And what we can do now is maybe take a moment to reflect on some of the incredible highs and a few lows, you know, the first steps of the rotavirus program, the first words, the first major successes, and also some of the skinned knees that invariably will occur. So I'm going to cover all the bases, and I hope that it's a little bit more entertaining. I found this really nice 1924 baby book that maybe I'll be a little bit more entertaining than just a stark blue background all the time. Let's get started. So here is our title page, our table of contents. We'll be discussing a little bit of the background with rotavirus vaccines, and then we'll discuss the vaccine coverage, the most recent estimates, which have been newly calculated, vaccine effectiveness, and also vaccine impact, which, just to give you a heads up, is a little bit different from the vaccine effectiveness. We'll discuss several new topics from the vaccine safety aspect, and then briefly we'll talk about serotypes before summarizing. Okay, so I think everyone probably knows this by now. We won't spend much time. There are two vaccines against rotavirus that are approved in the United States. The first is produced by Merck and Company. It's Rotatec. It's a pentavalent vaccine at three doses at 2, 4, and 6 months. And it was licensed and approved in 2006. The second is GlaxoSmithKline Biologicals Rotarix. It is a monovalent vaccine with licensure and approval in 2008. It's a two-dose vaccine at 2 and 4 months. Now, both of these are live attenuated oral vaccines and have demonstrated clinical trial heterotypic immunity against other strains as well. There has not been a head-to-head clinical trial with these two vaccines, and the U.S. ACIP approved both of them for universal childhood vaccination with no preference. You can quickly see where they do fit into the U.S. immunization schedule at 2, 4, and 6 months, 2 and 4 for Rotarix. And let's take a look at the growth pattern for this vaccine. Let's take a look at how well vaccine coverage has occurred in the past few years. And so what we do for that is we, what we've been estimating in publications and our own administrative purposes is looking at the CDC's immunization information system for this estimate. We look at greater than or equal to one dose of rotavirus vaccine among infants at aged five months. And there are eight IIS sites. There are sentinel sites in eight different states. And we typically, for the purposes of rotavirus vaccine, focus on the four sites that have been consistently reporting vaccine coverage data since the birth of the program. So Margaret Cortese et al. In 2009 published a vaccine coverage paper in the MMWR, and by the second quarter of 2009, they found that there was a 72% vaccine coverage for greater than or equal to one dose at these four sentinel sites in the states that you see here. Now, within about a 1 year of Rotatec being approved, we had about a 40 to 60% vaccine coverage in these four sentinel sites. And after that, it was about a 2.7 or 3% increase per quarter per site, nice steady uptake through the end of the second quarter of 2009. What we've done for the purpose of this presentation is we've actually newly calculated the information through the fourth quarter of 2010. So this has not been presented before. And whereas second quarter 2009, 72%, now we're at 77%. We've gone up 5 percentage points. You can see the range. And we'll take a look here. I think this is interesting, and we have not completely digested this information. But you can see that the first three sites in Arizona, Michigan, and Minnesota have continued incremental changes or incremental increases in each of these periods of time here, and now up to 81% in Minnesota. What's interesting to me is looking at Oregon, the bottom row, and actually the vaccine coverage estimate has decreased from 74% at the time of that MMWR to now 66%. And this information is so new that we're not quite sure why that would be occurring. So if anyone is from Oregon and would like to have a poke at helping us understand that, then please come to the microphone later on after the presentations. But we find that that's interesting. Now, if you look at vaccine effectiveness for, it's mainly Rotatec, which has been tested in the field in these post-licensure vaccine effectiveness studies. And that is simply because Rotarix had a later approval date and had not been administered in as frequently as Rotatec. So what you're going to see in these next slides is the U.S. vaccine effectiveness for Rotatec. And you can see here Julie Boom et al. From Texas Children's Hospital. I know that many of the staff who worked on that are in the audience today, conducted a very nice case control study in the 2008, and they were able to calculate VE, vaccine effectiveness, for all three doses. And I mainly want to direct your attention, many of you have seen this, but I want to direct your attention that there is actually very good VE, even at one dose, 69% vaccine effectiveness for one dose. And at three doses of Rotatec, there was very, very good 85% effectiveness against the severe acute gastroenteritis due to rotavirus cases. Now, in a second study, the same study team basically showed sustained protection from vaccination through the second year of life, or through the second year. Now, another study, this has not yet been published, but is anticipated to be published very soon, and it is from the group that I work with. I know several people are here from that group as well, the New Vaccine Surveillance Network. This is what I'm showing today is at least a three-site case control study, very similar methodology to what I just mentioned for Julie Boom's study. And we also estimated VE by dose, and you can again see that one dose VE was actually quite good, 73% is what we estimated, with, just like Julie Boom's ARI control estimate, 85% full course Rotatec vaccination against, in our case, hospital and ED severe rotavirus gastroenteritis. What we were able to do with our study was we also looked at the first and second years of life. VE seemed very similar. And if you looked at VE by rotavirus strain, there was also overwhelming similarity. There have been several other studies, different methodologies, of course. This one was in Connecticut. It was a hospitalized case control study with greater than or equal to one dose of Rotatec, and found vaccine effectiveness in the mid to high 90% range against hospitalized rotavirus gastroenteritis. And then finally, this was more of a cohort method using information from health insurance claimants. And this is a study by Wang et al., and it's a full, they estimated for a full three-course Rotatec administration in 2007 and 8 that the hospitalization, the prevented hospitalizations were 100%. And for protection against outpatient severe rotavirus, it was 96%. So extremely high. You can also see that regardless of the methodology, regardless of exactly which specific sites you're talking about or large cohorts, you have very similar results. I think that in the United States, it's been a success story. It's a very high rotavirus vaccine effectiveness. And now here's a little picture from our baby book, and this is going to discuss vaccine impact. And I thought that this was an appropriate picture because it really does resemble the next slide I'm going to show, which is this one. The first year of great 40 to 60% vaccine coverage was a blockbuster year for decreases in both hospitalizations, which you see in the blue line, and ED visits, emergency department visits, which you see in the red lines. These are data from our new vaccine surveillance network. These are rates. We were able to do that because we captured this information from a countywide populations for the hospitals and ED departments that we study there. And so these rates show a dramatic decrease in 2008. In fact, for us, it was an 89% decrease. We're going to discuss some of the reasons why in just a moment, but we see in 2009, compared to the 2006 baseline, that was a 55% decrease. In other words, it was a bump back up. And then preliminary data from 2010 are showing that, again, it was an incredible decrease down to about what we saw, or maybe just under what we saw in 2008. I will reveal that this ongoing rotavirus season that we are currently in now, we have probably more of a profile of what we saw in 2009 in terms of rates. So that would mean a bump back up. And what I offer is that perhaps we are seeing the beginning of what had been predicted in some modeling scenarios of perhaps a biennial epidemic of rotavirus, where it goes down and then back up, and at every other year you have a slight increase. You might wonder why it went up in 2009, and we're going to talk about that next. Okay, in fact, let me go back just a second, because in 2009, the kids who were going to the hospital and ED department were actually older. The median age and even the mean ages were older than what you saw in 2008. And so what's been presented just earlier this morning on indirect protective benefits from rotavirus vaccination, I think really does come to play here. So what we have here is that same hospitalization bar that you just saw on the previous slide is in blue here. The vaccine coverage for the NVSN network is in the dotted green line. And what we've done to calculate an expected rate is we took the vaccine effectiveness estimates for NVSN, and we multiplied that times the vaccine coverage by different doses, and we were able to estimate what, if there was a direct estimate of what the vaccine would do in our NVSN populations at the predicted vaccine effectiveness, then that would be that red line, the expected rate. And you can see that what is divergent there in 2008 between expected and observed is significant. That is a very large proportion of children who, according to our best estimates, probably would have been hospitalized but were not. And what we have been able to tease out is that those are probably children who averted hospitalization due to rotavirus because they averted exposure to rotavirus in 2008. And these were indirectly protected children, probably siblings or other community contacts of vaccinated infants who basically did not get it. In 2009, these kids were still immunologically susceptible to rotavirus. They had never been exposed to it. They had not been, in many cases, had not been eligible to even receive the vaccine. And yet they were protected in 08, and in 09 they were exposed and they had their rotavirus experience, which resulted in a slight uptick in hospitalizations here. And you can see here in our NBSN age groupings here that just look at the medians, how we have a fairly consistent 14 and 17 months with previous data in the pre-licensure period, and then we jump up to 24 months in 2009. And the distribution of those children between 2 and 3 years old was over half of all of our rotavirus subjects. So we had a very dramatic age difference in 2009. Okay. This was presented earlier by Dr. Shukat, so this will be placed in the public health slide hall of fame, I think, because it's been presented a few times. But you can see that this is actually new data, 2010, from our passive surveillance laboratory results. These laboratories, which are continuously involved in our program, that are submitting specimens and results, and we basically what you're looking at in the red line is the total that of these specimens that were rotavirus positive. And you can see when the vaccine was introduced and how the peaks per year declined substantially until you have 2010. And now our technical definition of a rotavirus season with this system is you have to have 2 consecutive weeks of having greater than or equal to 10% of your specimens for AGE, acute gastroenteritis, that come back as rotavirus positive. And so we never had that in 2010. So for the first time in reported history, at least, this was the first year with no technically defined rotavirus season. Although it did circulate, it was not a technical rotavirus season for the first time. I wanted to talk, and I was asked to talk, a bit about vaccine safety, and this is a very important topic to any vaccine program, but there's a history with rotavirus vaccines with starting in the late 1990s with the Wyeth Rotashield vaccine, where, as we all know, it was removed from the market after having a significantly elevated risk of intussusception associated. And so CDC and many other partners routinely and rigorously analyze the data to look for any potential risk of intussusception. We have this very much on the forefront of our research agenda. And this is something that that in October of 2010, the ACIP in Atlanta actually spent, I think it was greater than 3 hours on rotavirus vaccine safety alone. And I think there were perhaps 9 presentations, and many of the different angles on especially the intussusception question were presented. The reason this came up was recently there was a publication from using Mexican data looking at, it was a self-controlled case series study, and it basically was looking at intussusception risk among Mexican children and found that there was with Rotarix within 7 days of administration, that there was a 4.6 incident relative rate that was found in these Mexican children. So this sparked everyone's attention to rerun our own U.S. analyses. I'm going to show you those results in just a moment. The interesting thing was that a very similar methodology was also conducted around the same time in Brazil. And at that same window of opportunity, up to the first 7 days post-vaccination with Rotarix, it found no association. In fact, the incident relative rate was 1.1, not significant. Since then, there have been studies from Australia that also raised the issue. However, they found an elevated risk with Rotatec compared with none from Rotarix in different states administering those two different vaccines. So what we have is a very confusing set of results. Some of the results, even though they're the same methodologies, perhaps they don't really, the results do not match consistently across populations and then even by the type of vaccine. But it's worth noting that that what we have done, this is basically a lot of CDC folks and collaborators using the first set of data from the Vaccine Safety Data Link have looked very closely at this. You can see what was presented here to the ACIP group. So what we have is within 1 to 7 days of that first dose in the U.S., there was a not statistically significant risk ratio of 0.65, and within 30 days of that dose, it was a risk ratio of 1.4, and it was, again, not significant. Merck and company also conducted a study which looked at concurrent DTaP recipients as controls. And looking at this a little bit differently, the first time period, they found a risk ratio of 2.8, but it was not significant with wide confidence bounds, and a actually protective risk ratio at 0 to 30 days, but not significant again. So what we take from this is I think, a very important note. These are very wide confidence bounds. We are not completely sure that we currently have the sample size in these large surveillance systems to detect a very, very small risk of intussusception due to rotavirus vaccine. And whereas some other countries and some other methodologies may have found the results I mentioned before, in the U.S., we have not yet found those similar results, and they have not been replicated in the United States. There also may be other reasons biologically or perhaps among our population why they may not be replicated. But what we have for now is this finding, that there was not a risk in the United States from rotavirus vaccines. Now, let's take it a moment further, and let's say even if Mexico's incident rate, relative rate of 4.6 was applied to the United States, what would it mean? And Dr. Shook showed this morning. This was again presented at ACIP last year. So again, we have another one for the slideshow Hall of Fame. This one shows it shows on the left-hand column the adverse events that could potentially be due to both rotavirus, that's the first numerical column, and then if that excess intussusception risk were applied to our U.S. birth cohort to age 5 years. And again, as Dr. Sugar was very importantly described, you have 1,100 prevented hospitalizations from rotavirus compared to potentially one hospitalized intussusception case. And again, for deaths, that's also a huge difference in risk benefit. So I think that even if those results were replicated, which they have not been, I think that there's a very compelling statement to make that this perhaps is is one of the skinned knees, and the benefit outweighs the risks by far. There's one other safety finding that popped up in the last year that I wanted to briefly describe, and this was also mentioned. Porcine circovirus, through some novel viral metagenomic testing, it's usually found in pigs and is not, there's no evidence that it causes illness in humans at all. However, it was found in both of the rotavirus vaccines, and as I mentioned, it's common among pigs, but not known to cause illness among humans. Now, PCV, as it's known, was now believed to have been introduced through incompletely irradiated porcine trypsin, which is a reagent in the vaccine production process. And there's no evidence that this poses a public health risk or human disease. And in fact, we've just completed some qualitative analyses of what pediatricians and mothers are thinking about this finding that that these DNA fragments from a porcine virus were actually in the vaccines. And the pediatricians across the board said one thing. They said it's a non-issue to them. They showed in some of their pre- and post-questionnaire results that they actually had no changes in whether or not they would recommend this vaccine to their patients. And so that was very, very reassuring that to them, they knew what the risk-benefit profile of the rotavirus vaccines was from personal knowledge, and that they would continue to administer the vaccine. And for parents, they were much more leery and perhaps even afraid. And I wonder if some of you are actually administer or counsel parents, and you probably have some examples if they've heard of PCV. Rotavirus serotypes have not changed too much here. We have, in the first 3 years of the data that we have, it's mainly been G1P8. However, in 2009, we did notice a variation to a G3P8 predominant strain, which has been seen in other places. So in summary, I think that it's clear that we have a very effective vaccine. We have now almost 5 years of data, consistent results, very nice, clean vaccine effectiveness. We now have documented indirect protection on top of that. Ben Lotman presented this morning that perhaps even older adults are also indirectly protected from the rotavirus vaccination program against having rotavirus gastroenteritis. And it's, again, we have found that it's a safe vaccine,